So we're going to discuss one verse from Bhagavad Gita. I don't know what basis this verse was picked, but it's a nice one. 4:9, Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma chime divyam. So everybody knows the verse, so we can recite it together. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Janma karma cha me divyam. Evam yoveti tatvataha. Jakva deham punar janma. Naiti mameti sorjuna. Translation: one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is already explained in the 6th chapter. What's that verse? Chapter 4, text number 6. Ajopi san avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim svam adishtaya sambhavami atmamayaya. Translation: although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. Sambhavami, sambhava, similar to Srijamyaham. Krishna manifests himself. He doesn't require some external anything, because there isn't any external anything. There's nothing outside of himself that's the cause of Krishna's advent. It's by his will. He has a transcendental form which never deteriorates. It's eternal. It's the source of everything. And within that everything that is, that he is the source of, he enters by his own will. Srijamyaham, or sambhavami, atmamaya, by his own potency. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage. So there's something about this that we're not understanding, because otherwise we'd be liberated from material bondage. Would anybody want to volunteer that they're liberated from material bondage? Okay, so there's something that we're missing. What's that something? And therefore he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting the present material body. Such liberation of the living entity from material bondage is not at all easy. The impersonalists and the yogis attain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. That. After many, many births. Bahunam jamanam ante jnanabhanma prapadyate vasudev sarvamiti samahatma sadurlabha. After many, many births and deaths, those who are striving for understanding Brahman, they may come to the position, they may not also, come to the position of surrendering unto the personality of Godhead, understanding him to be the source of everything. And if they do that, that's the stage of liberation. Many, many births by that indirect method. But the direct method doesn't require many, many births. Even then, the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahmajyoti of the Lord, is only partial, and there is the risk of returning to this material world. What does that mean? It's partial. Someone can explain? Brahman is the source of everything. No. So how is it partial? Who can say? Para-Brahman is the source of everything. Well, then what's Brahman? Huh? Bodily effulgence. Someone else said?
Krishna is the source of Brahman.
Krishna is the source of Brahman. Oh. How do you know that, Krishna is the source of Brahman? Okay, from Bhagavad Gita, how do we know that Krishna is the source of Brahman? Say it slow. Okay, but there's this, okay. So Brahman is part of everything, and Krishna is the source of everything. And so that's inductively, Krishna is the source of Brahman. But then it's directly, Krishna is the source of Brahman. Or Krishna is the pratishta of Brahman. What's that verse? 1427, what's the verse? Brahmanohi pratishtaham. Brahmanohi pratishtaham. Krishna is the pratishta of Brahman. So it's okay to say, there are Vedic statements which say, and we can say, Brahman is the source of everything. Then we can say, at the same time, Krishna is the basis and support of Brahman, or Krishna is the source of Brahman. Yes? So they're not contradictory statements. So why is now those who are pursuing liberation, impersonalists, who after many, many births may, and they may not, they may come to the position of liberation, but that liberation is partial. Who would like to explain that? Why is that liberation described as partial?
Realize that in three aspects.
Amiti, Paramatmiti, Bhagavaniti. So let's just amplify that, and you can go on. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a very important verse in which Vyasadeva is writing that the absolute truth is understood by the learned Vedantists, those that are perfect in Advaya Tattva, Advaya Gyan, knowledge that is non-dual, absolute. Their understanding is that the absolute truth has three different features, or is realized in three different features. Those three features, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdyate. So the Brahman feature, Paramatma feature, and Bhagavan feature are combined the three features of the absolute truth, and realization of Brahman is partial. So the liberation of the impersonalists attaining the state of Brahman or oneness with Brahman is partial. They've gone beyond, in that partial state, it's beyond contact with the modes of nature and influenced by the laws of karma and all the material forces that are making this whole show go on. They're freed from that influence in contact with Brahman. But it's partial because they haven't realized the personal feature of the absolute truth. And there is the risk of returning to this material world. How can there be risk of returning to the material world if you become liberated? Sounds like a contradiction, no? How can you run the risk of coming again to the material world if you become liberated? Blissfulness is not present in that Brahman state. Okay. Well, it's surely better than this, so why would I come back to this? Yes?
The soul by nature is pleasure-seeking, mm. It's a protection of the Lord.
Mm. But it's a love. Although there's something of realization and attainment, it's as the Brahman feature is partial, the attainment is also partial, and when, having not attained the shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, one can fall down again. In fact, surely will. Aruya krishchena param padam tadapatantyado nadvarayushvat angrayaha. Bhagavatam speaks like that. But the devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body and does not run the risk of returning to this material world. In Sri Brahma Samhita 5.33, it is stated that the Lord has many, many forms and incarnations. What's that verse? Advaitam, Achutam, Anadim, Anantarupam. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this fact with conviction, although it is incomprehensible to mundane scholars and empiric philosophers. As stated in the Vedas, Purusha Bhotani Upanishad. Purusha Bhotani Upanishad. Ekadevo Nitya Ni Lila Narukto Bhakta Vyapi Dridi Antar Atma. The one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationship with his unalloyed devotees. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Bhagavad Gita personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculations, attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can, without a doubt, attain liberation. Vedic version, tattvam asi, is actually applied in this case. Who would like to explain that? What does the phrase tattvam asi mean? And how did this apply to this verse? What does tattvam asi mean?
Thou art
that. Huh?
Thou art that.
Thou art that. So, that's really explicit, isn't it? What does that mean? Thou art that. It's in search for the absolute truth, tat, referred by the pronoun tat. Thou art that. Tat tvam asi. Well, you're searching for the absolute truth. Well, that's you. That's the good news. You're God. And it says so in the Vedas. Listen, tat tvam asi. Well, we are qualitatively of the same nature as Brahman, the same nature as Parabrahman. Our qualities are like Krishna's qualities. Just like we heard Anandamayo Vyasat, this Vedic verse. The living entity, being part and parcel of this Paramananda, also has that feature of Ananda. Our qualities are like the qualities of God. But the distinction is, we're very tiny. Quantitatively, we're very tiny. And the Supreme is unlimited. Not at all tiny. Not even measurable. So great. And one who understands the transcendental nature of the Supreme Great, their nature, their qualitative nature becomes established, not their quantitative nature. Their liberated condition becomes established just by understanding the nature of the Supreme. A very simple example his example that Prabhupada would often give, the example of the spark. If there's a spark, if it falls some distance from the fire, then the glowing nature of the spark diminishes. If it lands on land, it may continue to glow for some time. If it lands on water, immediately it just goes out. It's still carbon, but the glowingness becomes extinguished. If it lands on dry leaves, more fire. So depending upon the contact of that little spark, it will exhibit its innate quality more or less. But when the spark is in full contact with the blazing fire, its full illumination capacity is exhibited. So similarly, the living entity, if the living entity can associate with the Supreme, the infallible, unlimited Supreme, then our nature can be like that of the Supreme. Tattvamasi is therefore established in that way. Nice, huh? I'll read the two sentences again now. Simply by accepting this truth in fact, well, that truth is the Lord has unlimited forms, but He's the one Supreme Personality of Godhead. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can, without a doubt, attain liberation. The Vedic version, Tattvamasi, is actually applied in this case. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, who says unto the Lord, quote, "You are the same Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead," unquote, is certainly instantly liberated. Well, I guess I'm liberated because I just said it. There must be something more to it than just saying it. And consequently, his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. In other words, such a faithful devotee... Oh, there's the key. One has to be faithful. I knew it was too easy. Such a faithful devotee of the Lord attains perfection. And this is confirmed by the following Vedic assertion. Tam eva viditvati mrityumeti nanya panta vidyate yanaya. One can attain the perfect stage of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. Shvetashvatara Upanishad. That there is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance. That's a lot of people. Mode of ignorance is very strong. And consequently, he will not attain salvation simply, so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey, or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. Such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Such puffed-up mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the devotees of the Lord. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and in this way attain perfection. Well, sounds like faith is really important, too, along with knowledge. It's something akin to a Christian notion that says if you simply profess, if you say, "I accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior," just say it, and your ticket to heaven is in your pocket. Just go ahead, say it. So just saying isn't sufficient. It's a foolish notion. So some persons will say, I won't say it. Or they'll say, I'll say it. And because I said it, I can do anything. Good, bad, and in between, and mix, it's okay because I said it. So we also can say it. But there's the other ingredient is with faith. So what's that very unique ingredient, faith, that must be there? So with faith, it's something that's from your heart. You place trust in that something. And when you place trust in that something, in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what an exhibition or a symptom of that faith is that you engage in His service. Not sometimes. Like the time that I say, I believe. So religion is sometimes called like that, a belief, a type of belief in something above us all. Prabhupada would become very unhappy with that dictionary definition. Religion is a type of faith or belief in something divine. Because a belief can change. Worldly examples of beliefs that change are very common in the world of science. Although, excuse me for... science has such a strong hold on the mindset of modern society that if science says it, it must be true. If they find some archaeological evidence to indicate something about the ancient nature of Vedic culture or something or something or something, then it must be so. But the nature of even so-called science is there's so much faith and belief. One example that comes to mind is when I was in high school, I remember from science class, we learned about continental drift. And when we learned about continental drift, it was, it was a joke. Ha, 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 there's some people out there that think, you want to hear this wild thing? What they think is that, the continents were formed by, originally it was one piece of land, and then pieces broke off and started moving around in the ocean. Ha, ha, ha. How stupid is that belief? So that's what I learned in science class. And then something happened. About 15 years later, because I wasn't reading about it in science textbooks anymore. It was still ridiculous. And the next thing I knew is, it's a fact. And anybody that doesn't think so is unscientific. Ha ha, how foolish they are. You know what I mean? What continental drift is? Ashmi, did you learn that one in school? Continental drift?
Yeah.
They mentioned it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, when I was your age, it was a joke. And now it's a fact. And that's, etc. There are many such things that are true in one generation, and the next generation, they're false. So that's a belief. I'll do another one. Once it was believed that the world was flat, and then somehow or another the idea came, no, the world is round. Let me tell you, I heard this from Shiva Prabhupada, from Badri Narayan during our recent meeting in Italy. Prabhupada was in the association of a reporter. He was visiting someplace somewhere, and the reporter was one of these really aggressive type of people that wanted to say something really confrontational and get you to say something in response to that confrontational comment, and then that was the substance of their article, that was their technique. So he asked three questions. Let's see, I can remember two of them. So one of the questions was, Swamiji, we heard that in your Vedic picture of things, that you believe that the world is flat. Is that so, Swamiji? And Prabhupada's reply was, everywhere I go, it's flat. And then he turned to his assistant, except in New Vrindavan, in West Virginia, it's very, not very flat. And then the man said, I heard that you believe in evolution. You don't believe in evolution. That evolution is something that hasn't taken place. And Prabhupada said, we believe in evolution. In fact, no, he said, there's no question of evolution. You are still monkeys. And the man didn't know what to say. And I forgot there was a third question. So I'll have to ask Bhaji what that third question was. So, somebody that has... They're cute. But oblivious. By the ascending processes of acquiring knowledge, it's not possible to understand the personality of God, to understand the absolute truth. And the understanding of the absolute truth is far more than just recitation or an utterance of belief. If one is still holding material conceptions, it's not possible to understand the transcendental nature of anything, of the soul, or of the Supreme, or of the process of connecting with the Supreme. It's not possible to have that properly understood. The way to properly have it understood is through the descending process of knowledge. To receive this transcendental knowledge with faith from a qualified source. Therefore, Prabhupada is stating here, those who are in this unfortunate condition of speculative philosophers, their only hope is that by some association with a Vaishnava devotee of the Lord, they may become freed from that circumstance. Otherwise, they're stuck in a state of ignorance. Although the state of ignorance may be a very elevated state of scholastic academic power. Sometimes Prabhupada would speak directly about Dr. Radhakrishna. And he would speak directly about his being, although much appreciated in the world as a great scholar of Bhagavad Gita, what was his business? His business was, or put it bluntly, he said, his business was killing Krishna. That somehow Krishna would just disappear by philosophical jugglery. Krishna would just disappear. But the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to reveal Krishna. So, in fact, just the opposite of what the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is would be established by such a speculative philosopher. And for such a position of speculation, not possible to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's form. That Krishna has unlimited spiritual forms is also something that confuses the mind, bewilders the mind of a mundane personality, because how can you have so many forms? If there's inductively, if there's so many forms, there must be something behind those so many forms, and that's it. That's the absolute position. And the so many forms are from that absolute thing, whatever that thing is. Inductively, that's the reasoning. But conversely, why that absolute source of all things, having unlimited spiritual potency, may not also have unlimited fully transcendental spiritual forms. How can we, how can we limit that which is unlimited? If, or the other way around, if the unlimited is truly unlimited, then he'll exhibit that unlimitedness in such ways as this, having unlimited spiritual forms, fully spiritual forms, having nothing to do with this material contamination, having nothing to do with the modes of nature, who appears out of his own sweet will simply because he wants to, not because he has to. Just like this, the scheduled incarnations of the Lord. Sounds like, the conductor of the train that has to be on time. So he, on schedule, he comes. The Lord makes the schedule, and he comes. But he's not obliged to come even if it's his own schedule. He comes because it's his own sweet will. He comes because it's his desire to relieve the conditioned souls from their material conditioning. And therefore, the companion to this verse, Pritranaya Sadhuna, Vinashaya Chudu Skriptam, Sam Dharma Sangstapa Nartaya, Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. He comes for those reasons. He has his own personal desire to fulfill, and so he comes with his own Atma Mayaya, his own spiritual potency. And so, again, this point of faith, if one has faith in these Vedic statements, the statements, the revealed truths of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what do you do with that? The exhibition from the teaching of Bhagavad Gita is that one serves Krishna. One serves that which is the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samandita iti matva bhajante mam. Thus knowing, one engages in his service. It's the natural consequence of understanding Krishna's position as the source of everything. Not the partial understanding, but the complete understanding. And with the complete understanding, faith in that, then it's Krishna who I serve. Because we must serve. Constitutionally, we're servants. Who is there that's not serving? Who is there that can say they're not serving? Maybe a big man might say, I'm not serving. Everyone's serving me. But who, that big man, he's also serving the people who are serving him. The President of the United States, he's serving the persons who elected him. He's the servant of the country. Anyway, you can analyze any living being. And that living being, anything that's alive, is serving. Because that's a fundamental position of the soul. We're all servants. Fundamentally, we're servants. Constitutionally, we're servants. So when that service propensity connects with the source of everything that exists, we serve the Supreme. When our knowledge is so developed, we understand what is the source of everything. That service propensity goes to the Supreme. Even it may be we're serving others. We're serving others with that understanding that Krishna is the source of those others. So indirectly we're serving Krishna. Just like in families where there's children. The parents are serving their children. The children are serving their parents. We're serving one another. But in Krishna consciousness, it means that that service to one another is part of our expression of our service to the Supreme. Nothing is separated from He who is the source of everything. Our service becomes service unto the Supreme in all the varieties of ways that we serve. That doesn't mean negating any part of our material existence, but rather the opposite, connecting our material existence to the service of the Supreme. That's the natural consequence of transcendental knowledge of Krishna. We serve Krishna in all circumstances. And one who serves Krishna in all circumstances, what's their destination? The spiritual realm. Chakva deham punar janma. Naiti, mamiti soja. They retain Krishna's abode to serve him eternally. And if the object of our service is something else, that will be our something else will be our destination also. So there, those laws of nature are operative. A devotee understands them, and understanding them, their attention goes to Krishna. Not for want of, or out of want of liberation, but out of a natural affinity to repose our service upon our superior, and our ultimate superior is Krishna. Supposing you received, for the Ananda Mela, you're going to have some VIPs, right? Amrita Nanda, there's going to be some VIPs coming to the Ananda Mela? The mayor. The mayor or some representative of the mayor? The mayor himself. So when the mayor comes, are we going to make some arrangement to receive him in a respectful manner and so forth and so on? Of course. Huh? Okay. Very nice. So, what if the governor of the state came? Maybe one of these years we'll get the governor of Washington. Maybe one year the president of the United States. Maybe one year the personality of Godhead. And it's natural we honor some important person. So naturally, similarly, the supreme important person, he who is the source of everything, when one understands factually that Krishna is the source of everything, service unto him flows very naturally. Natural. The process of devotional service is very natural. It's just now misplaced because of our poor fund of knowledge and our hard hearts. So if with proper fund of knowledge, from understanding that comes from Bhagavad Gita, heard from the proper source, our position of devotional service becomes secured, unflinchingly fixed in all circumstances, in difficult times, in ordinary times, and joyful times. We don't lose sight of our devotional service to Krishna. And such a person doesn't take birth again in this material world, but goes directly to Krishna's abode. See if there's any comments or questions on the verse. Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada Maharaj ki jai.